taking my cue from this spirit world practice. 1. Prefer not to work with progression in hypnosis except in spiritual screening rooms. Once in a while, in conjunction with something else under discussion out of the ring, a subject will get brief flashes of scenes where they are participating in a future event, such as being on a starship. I usually don't push for more information here. Moreover, these flashes of future existences are mercurial since people may only see a single possibility that could change when the time actually arrives, owing to a whole host of new circumstances and decisions based upon the timelines of history leading up to these events. The screening rooms are helpful to those souls with reservations about accepting a covenant for the next life. For many, observing certain aspects of their future gives them confidence. Nevertheless, some apprehensive souls have said they refuse to enter the screens to directly sample bodies for fear they might lose their nerve in accepting a difficult life contract. The more intrepid souls feel the screening room is designed to foster just the opposite reaction because you are allowed to test the waters before jumping in. A poignant example of someone preparing for a trial is the selection of a homosexual body. Since a predisposition to being a gay or lesbian person is essentially biological and not the result of social learning or environment, these bodies are picked by souls for two basic reasons. As I have said before, at levels 1 and 2 many souls choose bodies of one particular gender around 75% of the time because they are comfortable being male or female. I find that my gay and lesbian clients have started the process of alternating gender choices in their lives, which is reflective of the more developed soul. Choosing to be a gay male or lesbian female is one means of affecting that transition in a particular life. Thus, their current sex may not be as familiar to them as the body of the opposite sex, such as a gay male feeling as if he is actually in the body of a female. The second and far more important factor is souls choosing a gay or lesbian orientation in advance of the life they are now living because they deliberately chose to exist in a society that would be prejudiced against them. My gay and lesbian clients are usually not young, inexperienced souls. If they go public, this means these people have decided to live a life where they will be swimming upstream in a culture with rigid gender role stereotypes. They must try and rise above public abuse in order to find self-esteem and self-identity. This takes daring and resolve, which I see when I take these clients back to the life selection room when these decisions were made. To illustrate all this, one had a gay male client who was once an empress in China. After a long wait, he was in his first incarnation since that life of luxury and power. This soul, known as Jamona, explained that, as an empress he was in the body of a strikingly beautiful woman who wore a fortune in jewels and was waited on hand and foot, befitting her rank. It was a life of self-indulgence, lack of trust in everyone around her due to court intrigue, and adulation by her subjects. In the life selection room, just before Jamona's current life, there were three body choices. This is what my client had to say about his decision. Of my three choices, two were women and one was a handsome young man who, I was told, was feminine inside. One woman was very thin, almost frail looking, who was to live a quiet life of a devoted wife and mother. The other woman was chic, kind of flashy, and destined to be a society gadfly. She was also emotionally cold. I chose the man because I would have to cope with a life of homosexuality. I knew if I could overcome the shame of society it would offset my life of adulation as an empress. These selections were in keeping with the usual spread of body choices. The attractive society woman would simply have been an extension of my client's former life as a public figure who was self-absorbed and envied. The housewife would not have been a poor choice. Here was a middle off the road offering where Jamona would have learned to be humble and accept life's trials in poor circumstances. Even so, the candidate was another woman and Jamona wanted to break a long cycle of being in female bodies. Choosing the life of a gay man, according to Jamona, was the hardest one, although he has been much more financially secure than the woman of ordinary means. We are not coached during these selections, but the older souls know there is often one tempting choice which would not test us very much. Jamona knew this was the society woman. He made his choice not because he was pushed into selecting the leading candidate of the gay male, but because the trial was clearly the hardest. My client told me, "There have been many people in my life who have treated me with disgust and even loathing. I needed to experience this discrimination, to feel unsafe and vulnerable. One thing I have noticed in the selection of bodies is that the more advanced souls are able to make insightful comparisons between the bodies offered them within the time periods that are presented. I also see many less advanced souls accept the body they know they ought to choose as the best course of action. They trust the selection process more than themselves." A client said, "For me, getting a new body is like trying on a new suit of clothes off the rack which you want to buy and hope it won't need alterations. Time Masters, only once every few years does a Time Master in training come my way. When I recognize one, they are a resource to be treasured. Since there are other specialties associated with timelines, I must guard against making early presumptions in the hypnosis session. For instance, the archivist souls assist souls in searching out their past histories and alternative timelines to those events. Thus, they function more as historians and chroniclers than as time masters who would track timelines of the immediate future for bodies under consideration in the life selection room. As with the other soul specialties, I'm sure there is overlapping here, too, with many masters working on time coordination for souls in need of their services. This is why my clients often lump them all together in their minds with the label of planners. There is much the Time Master trainees don't know yet, or so they say. As I probe the esoteric aspects of any soul specialty, there is the necessity of sorting out the usual blockages of details I am not supposed to know, as opposed to what my advanced subject really doesn't know. Readers may wonder why I didn't ask other relevant questions in the cases presented in this book. The chances are I did, but received no response. Sometimes, both the trainee in a specialty area and I bring forth information which starts off as being inadvertent and then snowballs. Such was the case with a soul called Obidum, who is an engineer in his current life. I will begin the dialogue at a memorable point in our session. Case 63, Dr. N. Obidum, can you tell me what you do between lives that represents your greatest challenge as a soul? S. I study time on the planet Earth. Dr. N. To what end? S. I wish to be a master of this art, traveling the timelines, understanding the sequences with people living in a physical world, to help the planners assist souls in their life selections. Dr. N. How is your program progressing? S. Sighs, very slowly. I'm such a beginner, I need many mentors. Dr. N. Why were you chosen for this training? S. It is very difficult for me to tell you because one don't think I am very worthy of this art. I suppose it all began because one enjoy manipulating energy and became rather good at it in my classes. Dr. N. Well, isn't this true of many souls who make things by energy manipulation in their creation classes? S. Beginning to warm to my questions, this is different. We don't create in the same way. Dr. N. What is different about your work? S. To work with time, you must learn spatial manipulation. You start with models and then go to the real thing. Dr. N. What sort of models? S. Dreamily. Oh, a huge vaporized pool of swirling liquid energy, thinning in those gaps where scenes are simulated for us and minibits. The gaps open, you see neon tubes of fluctuating light, ready for entry. Stops. It's really hard to explain. Dr. N. That's all right, Obidum. One would like to discuss where you are now working, who teaches you, and something about the practical art of becoming a Time Master. S. Quietly, time training is conducted at a temple, grins. We call it the Temple of Time, where teachers instruct us in the application of energy sequences for events. Dr. N. What are sequences? S. Timelines exist as energy sequences of events which move. Dr. N. Tell me how you manipulate energy in the timelines. S. Time is manipulated by compressing and stretching energy particles within a unified field and to regulate its flow, like playing with rubber bands. Dr. N. Can you change events in the past, present and future? Is that what you mean by manipulation? S. Long pause. No, I can only monitor the energy sequences. We operate as highwaymen who enter and exit the sequences, which we consider odes, by speeding up and slowing down. Condensing, our energy speeds us up and expansion slows us down. It's the same thing with events and people who appear on the sequences as points in the roads. We don't create anything. We intersect as observers. Dr. N. Then who created the time sequences in the first place? S. Exasperated. How can I know that? At my stage 1, I am only trying to function within the system. Dr. N. Just asking, Obidum. You're being very helpful. Tell me, to what purpose do you function as a time master in training? S. We are given an event assignments. The human choices around that event all have meaning. The practical applications of what we do involve human streams of thought and actions that join in a river of time. Dr. N. I would call these occurrences passages of action and memory of that action. S. I would agree. Particles of energy do involve memory. Dr. N. How? S. Energy is the carrier of thought and memory within the sequences and these never pass into oblivion. The conduit by which time is perceived begins with thought, the shaping of an idea, then the event and finally the memory of the event. Dr. N. How is all this recorded into the sequences? S. By the vibrational tone of each recorded particle of energy. This is what we recover. Dr. N. Can the sequences exist in all sorts of alternate realities? S. Pause. Yes, overlapping and interlaced. This is what makes the search interesting if one has the skill to find them. All things can be observed and retrieved for study. Dr. N. I need more direction here, Obidum. S. There is a lot I can't tell you. The particles of energy which are part of the causation for the setting up of events in time involve vibrational patterns with many alternatives. We view all this human history as useful for future incarnations of people. Dr. N. Tell me how you feel about alternate possibilities to events. S. Long pause. We study what is productive. Events, poor, better, best, are played out until they cease to be productive. Sighs deeply. Anyway, I'm still very new at that. I study the past scenes of what has taken place. Dr. N. So are you saying everything that can exist in time does not necessarily exist if there is nothing for human beings to learn from its existence? S. Pause. Yes. Similar situations of decision-making call for slightly different solutions? ND. After a while the differences are so small they would be non-productive as lessons. Dr. N. From all you have told me, Obidum, I have the feeling you are not much engaged in future time just yet. So how do you see yourself? S. I think of myself more as an archaeologist in time. My assignments are studying people and events of the past and present. The future is murky, the sequences unclear. No, I'm an archaeologist with time right now. Dr. N. Where did your studies really begin in this field? S. When my class was assembled for training at the temple. Dr. N. How many souls are in your class? S. There are 6 of us. Pause. Adding, I didn't know anyone before we got there. Dr. N. Obidum, tell me about your initial training. Certainly. This must be clear in your mind. S. I was sent to the world of Galath. It is a physical world similar to the geography of Earth. This world once had a great civilization, highly technical, and the Galathians were able to travel to other planets, which led to their undoing. Galath now has no highly intelligent life forms. Dr. N. I don't understand why you were sent to a dead world. S. It's not dead as much as vacant. When we arrived for training we assumed a transparent form which resembled the humanoid appearance of the old Galathians. Laughs. Dr. N. Tell me about them. S. I was just thinking, they were yellowish-green people, very tall and willow, without apparent joints, they had large, multifaceted insect eyes. Dr. N., what were they like as a people? S., the Galatheans were wise but foolish, like the rest of us. They came to believe in their invincibility. Dr. N., but what is the purpose of coming here? Isn't everything gone? S., don't you see? Their timelines still exist. We are here to practice intersecting with the old history of this place. This is kind of an exotic world with beat-up space platforms still circling the planet. On their ground there are huge spheres of habitation which are now empty and falling apart, plants growing in their ancient halls of learning, decaying vestiges of this once great civilization are scattered about. Dr. N., just what do you and your five classmates do, Obidum? S., we beam out our energy, and float through the corridors of their past time. One of the teachers helps us adjust our vibrations to intersect with certain periods of Galathean history. It is fragmentary because of our lack of skill, but certain scenes of their power are vivid. Dr. N., so nothing of the past is ever really lost. S., no, although the Galatheans are gone, everything they did, in a sense, still lives. Their triumphs, their decline, we can study their mistakes. I can retrieve people talking at certain moments, what they were thinking before they were conquered by another race and assimilated into their culture away from here. The Galatheans had a musical language which flows around their broken ships of space and deserted streets. Dr. N., what is your ultimate goal, Obidum? S., when I become proficient I will serve as an advisor for the planners who wish to design certain situations for people, help the library researchers, assist in coordinating selections in the sphere of life, that is, the ring, that sort of thing. Dr. N., Obidum, I have a personal question for you. If I was a soul with some time off between lives, could I come back to my hometown as it existed when I was a boy and see myself again with my family and friends in scenes from the past? I don't mean recreating all this in the spirit world, but actually coming back to Earth in a disembodied state, as you did on Galath. S. smiles, sure, although you might need some help with a talented teacher before you got the hang of it. Just don't expect to do any tinkering around with the original to make alterations. Sardonically, remember, you would be a ghost. Free will, at one of my lectures in Vancouver, BC, a distraught woman rose and cried out loudly, "You new age gurus tell us on one hand we have free will to make choices in our life and on the other that we are predestined to follow a certain plan because of past life karma. Which is it? I have no free will in my life because I am at the mercy of forces over which I have no control. My life is one of sorrow." After my talk I sat down next to this woman for a few minutes and learned that her 19-year-old son had recently been killed on a motorcycle. People have the idea that free will and destiny are opposing forces. They do not realize that destiny represents the sum of our deeds over thousands of years in a multitude of incarnations. In all these lives we had freedom of choice. Our current life represents all past experiences, both pleasant and unpleasant, and so we are the product of all our former choices. Add to this the fact that we may have deliberately placed ourselves in situations that test how we will react to events in our current life, which are not perceived by the conscious mind. This too involves personal choices. We occupy a particular body for many reasons. The young motorcycle rider, by his mother's own admission, lived for speed and essentially got a high from the dangers of his obsession. Because my last section on time opened the door to future probabilities and possibilities, it is appropriate to examine the ramifications of free will a little further. Reincarnation would mean nothing if all life was predetermined. In my remarks about timelines, I suggested that the future may exist in many realities. People who have premonitions about the future may be right or wrong. If someone saw themselves being killed in a certain place and time and it didn't happen, this potential causality could mean it was only the most dire of alternative possibilities. An argument for determinism, as opposed to free will, is that one source, or a collective group of lesser divinities, is responsible for planet Earth being populated with humans who suffer from disease, pain, hunger and fear. We live in a world of earthquakes, hurricanes, floods, fires, and other natural disasters over which we have no control. I have often said that Earth is considered by souls to be a very difficult school. The great lesson of Earth is to overcome both planetary and private destructive forces in life, grow strong from the effort, and move on. To a great extent, we come equipped with what we need to take care of ourselves. Karma may at times seem punitive, but there is justice and balance which we may not recognize in our sorrow. Fear arises when we separate ourselves from our spiritual power. We knew many of the challenges in advance of our life and chose them for good reasons. Accidents involving our bodies are not considered to be accidental by the soul, as I have tried to show in many cases, such as case 62 with the woman from Amarillo who was shot to death. The sheer will of our true self has the power to rise in opposition to our weakness in character, especially during adversity. We have the freedom to remake our lives after any catastrophe if we are willing to take the responsibility to do so. More important than the events that test us in life is our reaction to these events and how we handle the consequences. This is the primary reason for conscious amnesia. I have indicated that the soul is not usual, and I've shown all the alternatives to probable future events in the life to come. There are good reasons for this practice despite spontaneous spiritual memory recall, which exists with some people. Amnesia allows for free will and self-determination without the constraints of unconscious flashback memories about what we viewed in the screening room. While the scenes presented to us covering our next life are selective, my cases have shown we will be given the opportunity to review all the major alternatives after the life is over. I have a short but very graphic example of free will that reveals how even discarnate souls can be surprised by a sudden decision which can change the probable outcome in life. I had a client who was killed at the Battle of Gettysburg in 1863 as a newly recruited Union soldier. His name was John and he lived in a small community near Gettysburg. Although just 16, John and his sweetheart, Rose, had begun to talk of marriage in the future. The night before the three-day battle began, a Union officer rode into John's area looking for a young non-combatant who could ride a horse well to deliver dispatches. John had no plans to enlist in the war because of his age and the fact he was needed on his mother's farm. The Union officer found John and hurriedly explained his urgency, promising that John's enlistment would end when the battle ended. John was a fine horseman and he impulsively agreed to ride for the Union because I did not want to miss out on a chance for the grand adventure. He had to leave immediately without saying goodbye to anyone. John was killed the next day. Even as he floated above his body, John could not believe he was seeing himself lying on the ground dead. Upon returning to his spirit group, John was met by Rose, that portion of her essence she had not taken to Earth. At the moment Rose saw John, she cried out, "Why are you back here? We were supposed to be married." These soulmates quickly realized that John had abruptly chosen a path that deviated from his probable life. Even so, each path has karmic benefits of some sort, as was the case with John's brief army experience. I asked this client if he had been shown scenes in the screening room of what was going to happen at Gettysburg. He replied, "No, I accepted what they showed me up to the age of 16 because I knew they had good reasons to reveal only what I needed to know before that life. I have faith in the decisions of my guides." John, the boy soldier, was not shown the possibility of his death at Gettysburg, and this is very typical with such cases. Yet what about those cases where an untimely death is such a high probability in life that there is a necessity for the planners to give us the opportunity to volunteer for these bodies as a matter of personal benefit from the experience? I know past life regressionists who have had numerous cases of heroic souls who volunteered to participate in the Holocaust in Nazi Germany. I certainly have. Perhaps this is because so many of these souls from the death camps are now living new lives in America. There are options for all kinds of disasters. For the bad ones, Sometimes souls are prepared for what lies ahead for them by attending pre-life rehearsals, as illustrated by this statement from a client. I remember passing by a large group of souls in a preparation class who were gathered in an amphitheater structure. They were all listening to a speaker tell them about the value of life even though they were only going to Earth for a short time. They had all volunteered to be in some sort of disaster where they would be killed together. They were told to get mentally prepared and to make the most out of the time they had and that if they wished their next lives could be much longer. Case 64. This is a case of euthanasia involving a subject named Sandy. She provided me with another example of an instance where a death scene was shown to the principles of a future life. As is so often true with souls who must witness their death in advance of a life, volunteering is part of the contract. During my intake interview, I learned that Sandy was closely bonded to her brother, Keith, and that they were members of a large family. As his older sister, she had taken care of him like a mother while they were growing up. Keith was hot-headed and in his teenage years he lived on the ragged edge, driving fast cars and getting into numerous scrapes with the law. Sandy told me Keith lived as though he had a death wish. She added that Keith had hurt some people along the way with a capricious lifestyle, but he had a good heart and his zest for living each day to its fullest was contagious. Sandy always had a premonition her brother would die young. Keith was diagnosed with amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS, at age 27 and died 2 years later. ALS is a degenerative disease of motor movements that progresses into muscle atrophy within a couple of years. Toward the end, many patients must be on a respirator to breathe and they receive large doses of morphine to combat agonizing pain. When Sandy reached her spirit group during our session, we discovered brother and sister were companion souls. Keith was the fun-loving prankster in their group and over many previous centuries he had been rather careless of others' feelings. In consultations with his guide and members of the group, Keith recognized it was essential that he learn humility in order to advance. Being a soul of temerity, Keith asked for a life where he would be given a potent challenge toward acquiring humility rather than have this lesson strung out over many lives. He was warned that accelerated lives can be very rough. Keith said he was ready. It was a bitter pill in the ring to discover he would have to volunteer for an athletic body which would be immobilized by ALS. Sandy said that there was a point in the life selection room where her brother almost backed out. I will pick up her narrative at this place in our session. Dr. N, please tell me as much as you can about Keith's reaction to the body he was offered. S, solemnly, he was shown the worst, his body before and after the illness struck. How his independence would be taken away to make him dependent upon us. They kept nothing from him. Keith saw in the beginning of the disease there would be much self-pity and remorse, then terrible anger, but if he fought he would learn. Dr. N, switching back and forth from current time to the spirit world with Sandy, and did he learn? S, oh, yes. Near the end Keith grew calm, accepting and appreciative of what we did for him. Dr. N, do you have anything you would like to explain about how Keith prepared for this life with you? S, after a long pause my client's face takes on a look of acquiescence, I will tell you. It will be good to talk about this, I have told no one before, begins to cry and I work on keeping her in focus. Dr. N, we don't have to do this if it is too painful. S, no, I want to. Takes a deep breath. As we prepared to come forward into this life, I was to be the oldest child in our family so I came first. We had a long discussion just before my time. Keith said he was prepared to suffer but when he reached the point where he was totally incapacitated, when he couldn't take any more, I was to shut off his life support system and free him. Dr. N, you were going to do this in a hospital? S, we planned for that in the spirit world but then, thank God, he was sent home during his last 7 weeks and that made our plan easier. Dr. N, is this about pain? Certainly Keith must have had pain killers. S, morphine can only do so much. The last 7 weeks were terrible even with the respirator and pain killers. His lungs were so affected he could not move or talk near the end. Dr. N. 1 understand. Tell me about the plan you and Keith devised in the spirit world before your lives began. S. Sighs. We began our drill by creating a bed and the life support system Keith saw in the screening room. He had every detail in his mind. Then we practiced because I thought I would be dodging doctors and nurses.